Hello. We are live from WGN Studio today. You're watching and listening to Market Overdrive Podcast as my co-host, who is not here today. She's enjoying some much warmer weather than what we're enjoying today. She would say, we are one of the nation's premier real estate talk show. Here to obviously raise the real estate IQ of our consumers and give them some fun topics and, of course, information that they can take home on a regular basis and hopefully improve their real estate endeavors. We're live every Thursday night, 5:30. We just recently switched to this time. So today's our second evening show, and we are taking today into a whole nother world because we decided to jump 2018 from last week's show of being the market outlook, and we are jumping straight into the big boys in the second week, which is all about luxury. Before we go into the show and the topic, you can follow Market Overdrive on our Facebook page, /Market Overdrive. Obviously, we are on the WGN Network, which stands for We Great Now Network. Kidding. And you could also subscribe to their podcast, Market Overdrive Podcast, on the WGN Radio Plus, as well as, of course, go to YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. I think we even have Pinterest. Moving on, before we go anywhere, we have to announce and obviously mention the people that pay the bills around here. So we'd like to put a special thank you out to Mike Randig and Carmen Carbonara of Stewart Title, Tamika Scott with Money Matters Financial Peace, Denise Edenhofer, Denise, I said your name today the correct way, of Fidelity National Home Warranty, Joanna Diaz of Credit RX, Lisa Juzion of Allstate Insurance. So, with all that being said, today we are getting into something that's really fun. At least, you know, you don't have to be in the luxury market to buy a luxury property, but I think it's a topic that fascinates a lot of people in this world. We, as always, at Market Overdrive, bring in some of the best in the industry, and today's an exciting show because we got some real big players that have done a lot in this industry here on our show today, and I want to introduce first with us Michael, I don't want to say it wrong.
Michael Lafito.
Lafito. All right, because don't want to mess it up. Michael Lafito.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Michael is with, excuse me. Well, I go by the luxury listing specialist.
Yeah, I have two hats here.
Okay.
So I'm an agent with Conlin Christie's here in Chicago.
Okay.
And then I run a luxury consulting company and the founder of the luxury listing specialist certification for real estate agents and brokerages.
All right. Well, you got to tell us a little bit more because I'm holding something really fancy here. Not a lot of people come on the show that actually write books.
Well, it's a gift, too.
Thank you, man. So, you have to sign it, though. After the show, you sign this.
So, yeah. So we you know, help agents and brokerages with their marketing, how to sell high-end homes. In most marketplaces, the luxury properties aren't exactly moving quickly. So we assist them to get them sold and give them a little bit of a boost in their strategy and marketing.
With that being said, you can't have a luxury home without spending some serious money inside it. And when you spend some serious money inside your home, you better hire somebody that knows what they're doing. It's probably not a good idea to do it on your own. So what do? We go out and find who I think is one of the most renowned, known. I've known your name long before I ever met you. And funny enough, I met you last week.
Yeah, it's
pretty funny. And I've heard your name over and over and over, because every time I walk into a fancy hotel, every time I walk into a nice restaurant and the commercial stuff, I haven't walked in anyone's house yet, but I know you've done a lot of houses, your name pops up. Oh, it's Rocco. Rocco did it. It was all you. You were like a one-namer, like a prince or a Sinbad, right?
Yeah.
So don't even have me trying to say your last name, because I don't want to mess it up.
You want to try it?
Do it.
Ladizio.
Rocco, yeah. Ladizio of Slick Design Group. Slick Design USA, that is. It's a pleasure to have you on our show, man.
Thank you so much.
Honored to finally meet you as well. Love your work. Love your stuff. Tell us a little about yourself as well. How'd you get started? Why? Design.
Well, I've been doing this for 30 years. And
So you just started recently, huh?
I just started.
Okay.
And we primarily feature and design hotels, nightclubs, restaurants all over the country, and we also dabble in residential and yachts. So
yachts?
Yeah.
So you know something about luxury?
I think we know a little bit about luxury.
A little bit about luxury. So the residential stuff we're going to focus on, we've been in a lot of great projects, and, you know, it's funny, before we actually went on the air, we just had a conversation about a house that the three of us knew.
Right.
You know, for those of you that are watching that are not from Illinois, Burridge, Illinois is a very affluent neighborhood, a lot of luxury homes, a lot of large homes. You know what? Before we jump into the house specifically and a funny story and how we all have something in common with that house or know about it very well, let's first and foremost get a definition from two people on different sides of the spectrum. By the way, if I every so often I want to, you know, jump out of my position in my career, and I'm like, if I left what I do, which I love what I do, I've been doing it for 23 years myself, what would I do? And you guys both have my jobs, just so you know. So it's a little too late for me to be a serious competitor, but I envy the position. I love houses, love walking through them, love seeing them, love the concept of the marketplace. Fascinated with architecture. With that being said, you can't really have much of an architecture without the design aspect, especially on the interior. And some of the stuff that, that people just come up with is just amazing to me. Like, where do you get this from? Where do you even start with all this stuff? So for me, this is a fun topic. And like I said earlier, you don't have to own one to appreciate it. But the reality is, it is the topic of the show, the most dangerous game to play in real estate. And I want to get a breakdown from both of you guys what you define as luxury, because luxury can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and we'll share that around the room. What do you consider to be luxury, quote unquote luxury?
Well, that's a great question. So I speak across the country. Earlier this week, I was in Crown Point, Indiana, doing a training, and some of the agents said, "Well, we don't have luxury here in Crown Point," and I beg to differ. Every area, part of the country, part of the world has luxury. So I personally define luxury as a home that is valued at three times whatever the average sale price is for that given market. So, you know, Rochester, New York has a different average sale price than Davenport, Iowa, which is different than Chicago, which is different than Orange County. So three times whatever the average sale price is. So if the average sale price is $200,000, I would define luxury as $600,000 and above. If it's $500,000, $1.5 and above, and so on. So luxury, and I also have a definition for high-end. I defined high-end real estate as two times the average sale price. So if the average sale price is $150,000, I would define high-end as $300,000 and luxury as $450,000 and above.
So obviously luxury being the very top of these categories.
Correct.
Okay. Rocco, your opinion.
Well, I don't define these projects by value or price, like he's saying. Everything we do and we've been involved with has been luxury and very high-end. So the gamma of the size of the projects and the scope really is different than
I'll put the mic, though.
The projects that we're doing and we're involved with, everything was very detailed, very oriented, very high-end. But sometimes it wasn't high-end as in the whole project was high-end. There was just maybe a high-end part of a project that was maybe a medium-end project.
Oh, okay. So,
like, we've done variables of all levels, from $10 million project in Rancho Mirage on the golf course, mm-hmm, to a $10 million project in, you know, in the suburbs of Milwaukee, to a $1 million project. Mm-hmm. All of those projects had incredible amount of detail, which made them high ends, but not valuing it at the cost of what the real estate was.
So when you say high end, with the amount of detail, and your definition is putting a lot of detail and effort into something, are you also calling it luxury or just high end?
No, luxury.
Luxury.
Yeah.
Okay. All one and the same to you.
Correct.
Okay. So
a little different.
It's a little different.
We have high end.
Well, you have different careers.
Yeah.
You know, you're literally, I'm only assuming, Rocco, that at some point when people get into, you know, enamored with what they want and they're trying to build right, something that's dreamful or fascinating, money is usually not a very big topic. It's about the project at that point for a lot of these people, correct?
It is.
Okay.
But we've noticed in the past that at some point
the money does come up.
Budget comes up. And when you're told, we don't have a budget, just have fun with it, go with it. And then they come back to us and say, why is this X amount instead of this amount? You know, and I go, I thought we didn't have a budget here. And because we work really well with budgets.
Right.
Like, we did a really amazing home in Fox Point, which is right on the water and on Lake Michigan, up in suburb of Milwaukee. We were given a specific budget, and we met that budget. And it was the coolest $700,000 house that we did. And you would never know.
Which
my goal is to make it look like we spent $2 million,
right?
and work with a budget. But if you tell me there's no budget,
then there's no budget.
And all the people that have told me that,
well, it's like
have always come back.
It's like going into a restaurant; it's all you can eat, and then all of a sudden you cut them off on the second plate. Wait a minute! You can't do that. You have to be you're clear with what you're doing. But so, I mean, you can make them work within a budget,
right?
And I think that this is where the conversation gets interesting. Well, let me give you my point of luxury.
Yeah, what do you define luxury as?
A little bit of both. I'm a little bit closer towards yours, Michael. But I personally see it as what I would consider in excess of the neighborhood. Or I should say what I would consider in excess of you and your family's needs. Like, if you need to be in a certain school district for your kids because you're really intent to putting your kids in a certain school district, or you really intend to be in a certain neighborhood because it's close to work, or whatever it is, or you just want to be by the water. Like you said earlier, every market has a standard average. But at that point, anything above the average is a luxury.
Sure.
So if you want to be in, let's say, let's go into Hinsdale.
Sure.
Because of the school district, it's got impeccable high school. But the average home in Hinsdale is, I don't know, you'd know better than I would, $900,000 or $1 million. Any dollar over that, so to speak, unless you were in a bidding war and you had to be there, but when you start going to, you know, 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, you're just really just tacking it on because you're going to be fine with 4, 5, 6 bedrooms and 3 people in your family. Yeah, I just call me crazy. I know families that are like 10 people living in a 2-bedroom house. So, you know, do you need it anymore is the question.
Correct.
And me and Rocco had the conversation on the phone earlier.
Yeah.
You don't need an $800 pair of shoes. You can easily go buy a pair of $80 shoes and still get by. But people buy it.
Right.
Why?
You don't need a Bugatti. You don't need a Lamborghini to get to work.
You're
going
to get to work just fine in a Nissan, right?
Yep.
Right.
But you're doing it. So my definition of luxury is just in excess of what you need. Now, needing a good school system for your kids because that's where you want them to go to school, or this is the neighborhood you want to live in because maybe the crime rate's a certain way, whatever your need is in life, I'm a swimmer or I'm a surfer, so I need to be close to the ocean. These all have a need factor in there.
Yeah.
But you don't need a 1,300 square foot bathroom.
Sure.
Nobody does, right?
No.
I mean, no, nobody does. So that's my definition of luxury. But, you know, to each.
So above and beyond the practicality, basically.
Right. Yeah, above and you don't need 16 TVs in your house.
Right.
You probably only really need 1 to 2 at the most.
Yeah.
So.
My mentor, by the way, used to say, Dan Kennedy, rich people have big libraries and poor people have big TVs. That's one of my favorite quotes.
That's a good one.
Well, I'm never letting you come over to my house. I'm throwing all
my
TVs out before you come over. So, with all that being said, I want to get into some scenarios, some things that we've all done or seen when it comes to some people in the luxury world that have really won and how they've benefited. And then I obviously, you know, want to see where some people have really just blown it out, and then when they went to go sell their house, they shouldn't have been surprised, but they should have known better that they weren't going to get every last dollar back from the sale.
Yeah.
So if you can give me something, some great success stories. I know that people have made some big money just in flipping any house, whether it's a $200,000 house or a $300,000 house. They've made a nice little profit on doing that project. But give me some more stories, like in the luxury world, where you've seen, you don't have to share their names, obviously, but where people have actually won big in luxury by making the right moves.
Well, first off, I'd say is you need to own the numbers. So a buyer, an investor needs to know the end game, right? So first off, you make money in real estate if you buy it right. So many people think you make money on the sale, but if you buy something that's undervalued, you're already walking into it with equity. So you make money if you buy it right. But the second thing is you need to do your research and you need to know what the resale value is. So, you know, in the Chicagoland market, to keep it really simple, I would define luxury as like $1 million and above. And unfortunately, in most suburbs, and even in a lot of downtown area, that $1 million plus price point is what we call a buyer's market. So in every market across the U.S., across the world, at some price point, the shift occurs from a seller's market. A seller's market is when, you know, multiple offers, you sell it right away, you know, you get above asking price. There's parts of the U.S. that still get that. But at some price point, the shift occurs from that market to a buyer's market. Days on the market increased. Homes are selling at a substantial discount. Right. Showings occur far and few between. So at that price point, a buyer has to know what price point that is, because if they're getting into that game, they need to understand that that quick turnaround and sale is not going to be, unless you substantially discount it.
Right. I mean, it doesn't matter what marketplace you're in. Any buyer that sees a house has been sitting around for nearly a year knows they should go in guns blazing at that point with their offer.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So it's only going to be that much worse when it comes to luxury stuff since it's been sitting around a year plus.
So if you get it at a great price, or you say, hey, this is my trophy home, this is something that I want to call home, and whether I take a substantial loss because I'm bringing in an interior designer and over-improving it, but I'm okay with it because, you know, this is you know, my legacy or whatever it might be, then fine. But, you know, there was a house in my market that just it sold for 2.1 in the Wheaton area, and it just went back on the market for 1.3, and it's less than 10 years old. And so, you know, you need to know as you overbuild some of these properties that the exit strategy, you know, unfortunately divorce happens, job changes, you know, whatever it might be, and you might have to relocate. And so many people don't think about that when they're in the midst of building these McMansions.
No, they're permanent. Everybody goes into a construction project thinking this is where I'm going to die one day.
Right.
That's what sells them in consistently spending more and more than they really should. But the reality is it doesn't always work like that. Life happens. So I guess...
Did I answer the question, though? I mean, it was a long, drawn-out response, but I think it's important for a consumer to know an exit strategy, and is there a market for that exit strategy?
You did. You did answer it in a lot of different ways. And I think that you said, for the most part, what I gathered was buying it at the right price, having the right budget, and then expecting where you could sell it. Like, what is the realistic price that could sell fair? Not don't overshoot it because you think you're going to sell the first $3 million home in a neighborhood that's never seen over two. Those are some expectations that should be minimized. And I think we're speaking right now from not just a homeowner's perspective, but also from a flipper. Because I think what you're starting to see is the regular flipping market is starting to dry up a little bit. I mean, it's all over HDTV, and everyone's trying to be a flipper, at least part-time, if not full-time.
Everyone's trying to be in real estate, capacity.
But you got to be careful. Now you're going into luxury, and this is why it gets really dangerous.
Yes.
These numbers are bigger, much bigger. So if you buy a house that should be worth $2 million, finished and completed, and I contact you, and I'm the purchaser because it's a great deal, maybe it needs a lot of work, but the square footage is there, the location is there, the neighborhood is affluent. And I buy it for $1 million. And I want to make a 20, 30, 40% profit on this. It needs work. And you're going to tell me if you're going to do this, do it right. Don't walk into this project and essentially take, and I'm not knocking on Home Depot because it's a great place to get some stuff, but don't build it like all the way flush out of Home Depot. You're getting some stuff in here that a $2 million buyer is going to want. Because you tell me that if it's finished, it's worth $2 million. And that's when I contact this gentleman and say, hey, listen, man. We have a budget. No, this is not a no-budget project, but can you do something where I could sell this thing for a couple million dollars and maybe only spend five all in or six all in to get me to a point of saleability? Is that doable?
That's doable. We have different scenarios. So we have clients that come in and really don't care about the budget, and they let us do what we want to do. Then we have clients have very specific budgets, and the one thing about us is we are architects and designers, so we understand the cost value of everything. So I want to specify something and do something that makes it look like we spent more than we actually have budgeted. That's the trick, and that's where you get your knowledge by doing it so long.
Do you ever have consumers ask you for your personal opinion? In other words, hey, am I personalizing this new build or this remodel too much towards my style, or are you catering to what's in? So, like, the scenario that comes up for me a lot is, you know, you have this big home. Like, for example, I sold a property in River Forest. It was a house that was over $2 million. Okay. It was kind of nicknamed the taxidermist house, okay? A lot of animal heads inside the home and that sort of thing. but it had some personal taste to the owner. And so when I'm helping a seller, I always tell the seller to cater to the majority. We can't be all things to all people, but based on market trends, based on market research, based on, you know, what that National Association of Realtors is telling us what buyers are looking for, you know, I try to take the seller's emotion out of it and say, remember, we're not selling, it's your home technically, but we're trying to cater to the majority, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're working with somebody, does that conversation ever come up where you're actually saying, now keep in mind, this is pretty eccentric. We talked about a property off air previously. This is pretty eccentric. You know, have you ever thought of, you know, resale? Do you ever talk someone off the ledge a little bit and try to get them to neutralize a little bit within their palate, within their taste?
I do. And most of the clients that we have kind of already appreciate our style and are on the same page with us. It comes into effect if they were going to do this as an investment. And
you could finish up. Don't worry about it.
If it comes into an investment situation, I'm going to advise them to do it in a trend that will help sell. And that's what we do. We have to do these projects
so
that
consulting,
are timeless.
Consulting and advising.
And
involved.
Advising.
Good.
And what makes you good is how many items they agree with you on. That's how good you can. So if you're able to sell the idea or sell this concept to either make this house sell better for a resale situation, or even doing a personal thing where it's not that over the top but still beautiful and museum like, that's what we do.
Cool. Well, those are the good stories. We're being safe.
Yeah, these.
But before we get on to a horror story, we have to do what that noise was, is the nitro question.
Oh, okay.
Which the nitro question today is sponsored to you by Stewart Title. Who wants to take the nitro question? You guys can pick.
Oh, I'll take it.
You'll take it? All right, you'll take it. In all the homes you've seen, and you don't have to answer right now. You can wait and think about it, let it marinate for a little bit. What is the most ridiculous thing you have seen from a luxury perspective, not just something weird, but like from a luxury perspective where you just left and shook your head and go, that has got to be the dumbest thing I've ever, I can't even imagine what went in their head when they put that in there. Whether it's the floor or a kitchen or something weird in the bathroom or something that they thought, it was just too much, way far and above and beyond where you're like, I just don't even understand that one. Think about that. It could be weird.
I have two short, simple answers.
Park them. We have to go back. People are going to want to hear that one later. All so right. We'll be back in about 15 minutes with that one to get that answer from you, Michael. But what I do want to go through and what we did talk about, and I don't want to pin this person out by any means. I talked about somebody that I met in a luxury home situation. Let's get to a horror story. And in all fairness to anybody that was building a house pre-2008, probably has some kind of a horror story, because if you're at that cusp around 2006 or 7, no one wants to buy this house, and it's just the market was flat. But you know, we mentioned a house, and ironically, here we are today.
It.
You're the listing agent of that house.
Yeah.
It's a great house. It's a magnificent house from a lot of perspectives. It's in a great neighborhood. It's in a
great school district.
You know what? It's your listing. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about it? It's not my listing. It's your listing.
It's known as the Palace Royale. It's in Burr Ridge, and formerly known as Villa Taj. And you know, I don't have all the specs on it now, but it's, you know, it's about 30,000 square feet with the lower level. It's got a 22 car garage.
30,000 square feet.
Yes, correct.
Is that the point of excess? 22-car garage.
Yeah, I don't think most human beings need 30,000 square feet.
I don't think all of us combined have owned 22 cars in our lives. I've only owned like 10, 12. No, maybe. Okay, forget that.
So I could fill it.
You'll add that up real quick.
Sorry.
Between my kids' Nerf guns and toys, we could fill it quickly other things, but maybe not cars.
This is true. So go ahead. 30,000-plus square feet.
Yeah.
22-car garages. What else?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a 49-by-49 room ballroom, which it's just beautiful. So, you know, but it's very taste specific to, you know, the potential buyer. My client, when he purchased it, he did a lot of things to neutralize it, because the original owner, the original builder, had a lot of Moroccan, a lot of Middle East influence in the style.
My opinion was either back then.
You've been in it.
I've been in it. Yes. I was in it before it was with the original owner. And it's a magnificent house, and he had a lot of passion in it. I mean, he was talking, he was Googling over this thing all day long. But it is very specific to your taste palate. Like, what, if you're either going to love this house or absolutely hate this house, but he went in for millions, and I don't want to even get into it because you have it on the market.
Yeah, we don't need to talk numbers.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
An obscene amount of money. So go ahead.
So my client purchased it, and we talked a little bit, catered to the majority, did a lot of neutralization on the inside, brought in some hardwood floors, softened up some of the wall treatments and so forth, trying to cater to the majority because the inside before was...
Like a timeless design.
A timeless design, as you referenced. And so I've had a lot of real estate agents and buyers say, holy cow, you've done a great job with the inside because, you know, it's really toned it down a lot. So we brought in neutral furniture and some area rugs, and the address for the property is, because it is for sale,
sure,
6501 County Line in Burridge. And you know, listeners can watch, you know, look at the photos. The website is thepalaceroyale.com, and we did a really cool video. We brought in 7 luxury cars, 3 Lamborghinis, 2 Bentleys, and 2 Rolls Royces to showcase the
every
garage.
Every so on, I keep an eye on that property just because I'm friends with the original owner. And I'm always curious of what happens with it next. And
come by it again, will
it's
you?
A staple house in Burridge. I mean, you can't, there's a couple houses in Burridge everybody knows. And and it's one of them, that's for sure. And if you are into the western suburbs, whether it's Burridge, Oak Brook, or any of those Illinois western suburbs, Chicagoland western suburbs, you're going to know this house. That's for sure. But now, Rocco, let me get into a situation with a house like this. The owner comes to you and says, actually, this owner took it all on himself. He had a friend helping him. He didn't really officially have a designer. That I know for a fact. His friend had some design skills, but it was really very owner-driven. This is what I want. And there wasn't no negotiation. So I think he didn't hire an interior designer, not because of budget, because clearly he spent money.
Yeah. Right.
But I think it was just because he wanted to do it.
He just wanted
to be his
he
hand on
be,
it.
Yeah, I know.
But if somebody comes to you with this situation like this, and I've seen the video, so I know the changes have been made that you mentioned. But before that, I remember what the house looked like. It was very Moroccan influenced. What's that conversation like? And they say, you know, this is what I want, and I want you to go crazy. And you can go crazy because you know how to do everything from anywhere. What's that conversation like with you? How does that, like, do you warn them this might not turn out well later? Or do you just say, you know what, I'm going to take your order, and whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you?
No, I do. I do have my opinions, and I do warn them up front, and I do tell them, you know, if this is something that you're going to resell down the road, you know, I think we need to, you know, I give them my comments and my input. I really have gone to a point in my life and my career that I could really pick and choose
the clientele you work with. Yeah.
But I want to listen to everybody, and I want to work with people, but I sometimes have a good way of molding them and kind of bending them.
Yeah.
But if I could see if I can't get it to a point, I would never be involved in something like that because that's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the personality and the person doing something that they're for their own little groove that'll never be liked or appreciated by anybody else in the future.
Right.
But it's hard. It's hard to. It's hard to say that.
I'm sorry, Rock. Go ahead.
It's hard to say that right to them. You know, you have to kind of
grant their wishes too.
Yeah, and grant their wishes because projects like that are very high commission. You know, high fee jobs and projects, and you know. But we've walked away from some projects that we just didn't believe in the architecture. We didn't believe in the direction it was going. And, you know, sometimes you have to do that.
And I met the gentleman. We became friends. We're still friends to this day. And I made my comment, not nearly as prolific in either one of your two's line of work. I do financing for a living. And I see a lot of houses. I see the houses they can and can't appraise.
Right.
I see what comes through my hands. I mean, I have to do the loans for these things.
Yep.
So I'm in sync with what the appetite is as well. But I told him specifically, I said, you do realize if you ever want to sell this house, you're going to have to literally gut a third of it or do so many changes that you're going to be in tears when you see your Moroccan style tile thing going on here in the ballroom.
Or the columns.
And these columns that are so exaggerated and from like the early whatever.
Yeah, it looks like Roman times or something.
Right. I said, a lot of people will hate this. not dislike, hate it, but then there will be somebody that will love it.
Right.
You already have a small pool of buyers in the luxury market as it is.
Well,
everybody that can't afford a multi-million-dollar house.
So you bring up a good point. So currently it's listed just under 11 million, 10.9. So your pool of buyers
shrinks significantly, just by sheer economics.
Absolutely. Then you have a very taste-specific style of a home, so you shrink even more. So you have 0-for-2 going for you. You got a small pool of buyers based on price point. You have a small pool based on taste-specific, you know, style, design, etc. So definitely makes it a more difficult resale task.
Right. And there's a good side and a bad side to that property. The good side is your prospective seller right now is, you know, he bought it at a good price when the tragedy happened to someone that overspent, the market crashed. It's the dangerous game that we're talking about.
Right.
Someone's going to benefit. And obviously there's going to be a happy homeowner that's going to get what they want when they buy your house, the listing as well. So there's two sides to, like, who took the correct approach and who took the incorrect approach, I guess, if you will. But speaking of houses that we all know, one that is probably the most famous house in all of Chicagoland, and I have my opinion on this one, and it's been a dormant listing, owned by the greatest basketball player of all time.
I knew where you were going before you even finished.
And I know you're going to rip this thing apart from a design aspect, because my opinion, this is my opinion, I love Michael Jordan more than I love any athlete in the history of athletes. I mean, he is, to me, the ultimate god of all sports, not just basketball, and he is a big part of Chicago landscape and history. But, man, the exterior of this house is so bad that you literally would have to give your shoes away for someone to, like, pay the tax bill on it every year.
He's offered to give every pair of shoes away. I'm kidding. Well, I'm not kidding.
I saw
that's
the
serious.
Ad. You can get, like, a free, like, all 25-year subscription of his shoes. With but the exterior of this house is horrific. Today. It was once probably really cool in 1992 or whatever when he built it.
I don't think it was. But
I mean, it's a very modern house in an area that is not very modern-esque.
Yeah.
It's like, Highland Park, Illinois is very old school, tradition, affluent.
So I have to be a little careful because the home is currently listed for sale, and so I can't,
It's an opinion.
Yeah.
It's not a fact.
Yeah.
Michael.
So it's been on for a while. And be honest with you, I'm surprised some billionaire from China hasn't bought it. Just say, I bought Michael Jordan's home, and I got 23 on the front gates. But, I've talked to some folks that, have some influence. They've asked me for my opinion on it, and definitely have some ideas on how to reposition that property. It's a cool home. There's some really great features to it. It is taste-specific.
Yeah.
And but it's dormant, if you will. It's been on the market for, 6+ years. They contracted a company, which I do some consulting with, called Concierge Auctions. Concierge Auctions, when you hear auction, you think distressed property, but Concierge Auctions specializes in that high-end space. And they just sold a property in Dallas that was listed for $43 million, I believe, for $36 million, the highest auction ever recorded in the U.S. And they did have bids, but ultimately his price was not met, and so it's still on the market.
I mean, he's fortunate enough that he could afford to let it sit there. There's no doubt about Michael Jordan's net worth, and we're not going to argue that. And again, you said something about it. I'm surprised a billionaire from China who's a big fan hasn't bought it. I try to put myself into that perspective. I just told you guys how big of a fan I am of him, right? Wow. And I'm not going to even say that I can or I can't afford the house because it doesn't even matter. I can't see myself buying it regardless. Because, at that point in your life, it's like, does it matter whose house it was? You're still buying a house.
Yeah.
It's still going to be hard to move. And when we're talking about how the game is dangerous, your fanatic approach to an individual isn't going to move the house on any
No.
sooner. I mean, this thing at one point started well over like $18 million.
No, it was in the 20s.
Was it in the 20s?
Yeah, it was somewhere in the mid-20s, and now it's $14.855 million, and it's been there for a couple of years.
I have an opinion on what I think it's going to sell for, but that's my opinion. So, Rocco, tell us why this thing's so hard to move in your opinion. Like, what about this house? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have.
What about this house do you think makes it, from a design
aspect? I actually
put
an offer in. I had a buyer. We put an offer on it in September.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us the price.
No, I can't. But
but you're going to tell me off the air.
All right.
See, I really think that house is specific to Michael Jordan. It was designed the way he wanted it.
Like the Moroccan house.
Like the Moroccan house. And what they have in common is they're not timeless designs. That you could still do an over-the-top project and design. But if you just do the architecture so it'll be something that in 20 years will still be relevant and cool. Like some of the homes that are being done in L.A. and Malibu were very minimal, very modern, but they're not very specific to that time frame or somebody's taste.
Yeah, taste-specific.
And taste-specific.
Yeah.
And these two are two examples of, you know, you got to find the right buyer, you know, and it. This is just my opinion, and this is how we kind of advise
people. It's a great opinion, and
because we're in the business too, you know, with homes and and costs. So all we could do is tell them what we think, and then it's up to them to make a decision. Then based on what they decide, then we decide if we want to move this way or that way.
Sure. So you use the term timeless designs, and what I've found,
those are the ones that move.
Yeah. I found most of the $2 million plus properties in the Chicagoland market are so taste specific. In other words, the owner built it to their style, and I call that decorating. You usually live in your home the way you decorate it, and so when you go to resell, you got to put your taste aside. So if we were looking at a home and it had pink wallpaper, and pink wallpaper is not in, you know, you have to tell the owner, hey, listen, I personally don't mind your pink wallpaper, but market research. So market research is the bad guy. Right. So I was recently selling a home in Highland Park, and it had green kitchen cabinets. So we made the recommendation that they neutralize it. So you might, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, love your green cabinets, but market research, today's buyers, the majority don't. So do we want to cater to the majority or to the buyers? Because 10% of buyers can visualize. In other words, 90% only see the way it is that day or the way it's photographed.
Absolutely.
So they can't see past it. I mentioned I sold a home in River Forest. It had 73 animal heads. It looked like a taxidermist house. Had a polar bear, had a lion, had 30 animal heads in the family room.
Right.
So I was a second agent. The previous agent, you know, said, no, it's okay to keep that there. But I know that buyers can't see past that. They only see what is. That's why staged homes sell faster than non-staged homes.
Clearly, you didn't design that house.
Clearly. No, but this another good thing is that we've been fortunate enough to have people and our clients that are really into architecture, and they understand what design is, what architecture is, and how to listen to somebody who's in that field and gives them the right direction so that something spectacular comes out. And this project that we did in Rancho Mirage, California, was right on the golf course, Thunderbird Golf Course, beautiful mid-century home. Designed everything from every screw to every lock to every door, and he was a fan of architecture and a fan of design. And I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of fan clients because it's really good to work with if they agree with you and it's not,
well,
you know.
It's if they agree or they're open.
And they're open.
They're open.
And the thing is, and again, we're doing something that this house will look good in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's not something that we have to go in and make.
Redo over. 20 years from now.
We can't.
Right.
I mean, so you got to pick the right finishes, the right colors. And I really push the minimalist, timeless design, and it works for it in the real estate end. You know, but he was like enamored of what we were doing, and that I showed you some of that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm surprised you said that because I feel like my biggest headache clients are the interior designers or the stagers, or because they have such an opinion, and they want it to be like their style and their decorating, and they're not open because they're not open to catering to the majority. So for me, it's like somebody that maybe did loans and mortgages before, and they mm-hmm. they know it all, right? They're trying to tell you, hey, Nick, you got to do this, but they're not experts in it, but they dabble in it just
enough. They're
experts
at what they are experts in.
Right.
But
they dabble in it just enough to think they know enough, but they don't know enough.
But I think we have the experience of doing commercial spaces and hotels, and
we have to
appeal to the masses. We have to make something that lasts for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got into – we started with that first, and then we got into all these residential projects, and a lot of the projects were a lot of the owners of these hotels,
and these bars and restaurants, yachts,
because they loved our style. And it's like, hey, let's do something. But it's not a nightclub in a house. It's very
homey.
Yeah, it's very comfortable. But again, I try and push them to do something that I like the word timeless, so that in 10 years, and you've seen some of our restaurants here.
Oh, yeah, like I've 10, eaten in all
years,
of them.
They're still you know, they still look good. Not but in residential, it's very hard because we have to accommodate a husband, wife, partner.
And if you think about it,
you got to be a great salesman, and you got to be able to, you know.
And if you think about it, to keep a restaurant or a bar or hotel looking good 10 years later,
it's a big deal.
That's a big deal because normally the clients are really tired of something in 4 or 5 years. They're like, all right, this is over. I'm done with. You know.
Yeah.
So. But we got to come back to the nitro question because we don't have a whole lot of time. And so it's flying by, believe it or not. And so the nitro question was, again, sponsored by Stewart Title today. Michael's going to answer the question. Michael, what is the absolute most insane, unnecessary, luxury, crazy thing that you've ever seen where you walked in and you walked out going, I can't believe I've seen that. I can't believe they even did that to their house.
Well... This one's the one that came to mind was I was marketing a property that had a Twister themed bathroom. You know, the Twister board game from about 50 years ago, and very taste specific, right?
Right.
That had to be a fun bathroom.
That's a great bathroom.
Probably if walls could talk, right? If walls could talk,
or tubs, or toilets,
yeah, or showers. Yeah. I'm sure there were some stories behind it. With that being said, I saw an opportunity though, in all honesty, and because it was such a great property, and. Although the majority of buyers probably would come in and replace that bathroom, I saw an opportunity to get buyers to talk about it. And I believe that's our job as agents, is to accentuate the best features of a home, downplay the least favorable, and get buyers and agents and perhaps the media talking about this property. So Chicago Tribune did a story on what will $3 million buy in today's market. And it was Trains, Trump, or Twister Shower. And I represented two out of those three. Trains was the River Forest home I told you about with all the animal heads. They had a train that went around the property. Trump was a penthouse unit in the Trump, and then Twister Shower. So, again, accentuate the best features and downplay the least favorable. But the Twister Shower was probably the thing that jumped to mind as
and
far
you're just
as
like, what the
unique,
is
like
this
very taste specific.
Well, you hit it. You're on the spot for the nitro question, but I can't not ask you what is the craziest thing someone's ever asked you to do or like put in where you're just where even you were thinking like, all right, this is just too much.
So we were working on this one project here in town, a very, very big residential project, and they wanted to put a putting green on the roof.
Oh, wow.
But just like a very minimal putting green on this little sliver of a roof, and this house also had a basketball court in it.
Well, you never know when you want to golf and you're at home watching TV.
No, but
you got to go upstairs and putt.
It was all the way on the roof, though.
How high is the building?
Four and a half stories, and you know it was massive, 15,000 square feet. Oh. 15,000 square feet, and. You know, it was kind of the wildest thing that, you know, I was requested. I mean, there's so many, you know, and that we can have another show.
We can have another show for some of the weird.
And some of the weird stuff. But I thought that was interesting, you know, and weird. And, you know, he also wanted like a guitar lounge. And he just wanted the whole top floor for himself so he could do whatever he want without his wife and his kids. And they weren't allowed to go up there. Which was kind of interesting.
I've never witnessed anything incredibly crazy. I told you about on the air, or off the air, that you know I had a client that put in like a 50-gallon or some massive shark tank in his house, and it wasn't a luxury home. So to me, that was
again taste specific. Right?
And I'm like, hey, listen, this is not going to increase the property value of your house. In fact, this might scare a lot of buyers away where they don't want this even to deal with from a maintenance perspective or just the way it looks.
Right.
This is for a kid in his 20s that's in the music industry. This is what this is. It's not a family of five that want to stare at a shark tank. But I thought that was interesting.
And you know, last year I sold a home in Burr Ridge for just about $1.5 million. And before he hired me, he well, right after he hired me, I should say, he was like all excited because, hey, I just put leaf guards on my gutters. The guy invested $20,000 on leaf guards to prevent leaves going in his gutters. And I, had I known ahead of time, of course, I would have advised him to invest his money elsewhere because you're never going to get that on resale. Again, if you're going to move in a home and you don't want to clean your gutters out, fine, you know. Right. But when you're going to resale, so it's really important. Here we are in the spring of 2018, you know, the Super Bowl was last week. If you're thinking of selling, you know, contact somebody that knows what the heck they're talking about and knows resale before you make improvements in your home for resaleability.
Right. Takeaways. Believe it or not, we have hit the 45-minute mark, roughly. That's fast.
That was quick.
So we got to do some takeaways. What's the one thing you want to leave with everybody when it comes to the do's and don'ts, the risks? I think we've obviously covered it, but in a nutshell, from your perspective and your line of work with buying and selling these properties, what's the last bit of tidbit when it comes to luxury that you want people to remember?
You know, work with an agent that specializes in luxury. Again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Most agents don't know how to position these properties through amazing photos, descriptions, videos, that sort of thing. And in a seller's market, you can be a part-time agent, part-time Patty, you know, I call them, part-time agent, and still successfully sell a home, but in a that's in a seller's market, right? Multiple offers. But in a buyer's market where it's difficult to sell, I recommend agents hire someone that's aggressive, thinks outside the box, uses social media, uses videos, uses virtual tours, the 3D tours, that sort of thing, and is hungry and aggressive and has the network, has the database of high net worth individuals.
Because luxury commands that type of stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's difficult. So you need to have a don't leave any stone unturned approach.
Rocco, what's the one takeaway for people playing this game and how to be safe with it?
I think what they have to do is, if you have an interior designer, an architect, and an owner, all of them have to work together with the contractor. So there's much disconnect.
Passing the blame is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if you have an interior designer that is specifying things that doesn't know the exact specifications that should be to the architect and the builder doesn't know, this is how money starts really flying out. And then they'll change a tub 5 times and then it goes back with us. If we're the architects and we do the interior design, we're specifying and detailing everything and we understand construction. So we work with the contractors and then there's kind of a bridge of everybody trusting each other, and the owner doesn't have to pay for these extras and changes all the time.
Communication, huh?
Yeah, communication. And that's what I've seen. And everybody could be an interior designer. Everybody could, you know, be a designer. But I think if you're looking for something very special, there's got to be a team that works together. So
that's important. I didn't even think about it that way. They'd all work together.
Because it was just brought up to me this morning with one of our contractor partners. They said, hey, you know, Rock, they just changed this tub. We just plumbed everything. We went off the drawings. I'm like, you know, we're not the designers. But it was a specific question, you know, and you know, we work with that real well.
So. Outside of buying this book.
Luxury Listing Specials. You can find it on Amazon.
Luxury Listing Specials. I'm going to have mine autographed later today. How do people get a hold of Michael Lafito?
You know, email michael@marketingluxurygroup.com, michael@marketingluxurygroup.com. We have a podcast, so for any listeners that are in the real estate industry, our podcast is on iTunes and Stitcher, which is Luxury Listing Specialist. But email's probably best.
And they can download that podcast right after they download ours, right?
Yeah, yours first.
I don't care which one you download first. Just download both of them, okay, people? Right, Rocco, thanks for coming on the air. Obviously, it was a pleasure to have you. We still barely met. Yeah. You know, it's like we literally met for 20, 30 minutes the other day. Tell us where everyone can get a hold of you as well.
You can get a hold of us at our website, slickdesign.com or slickdesignusa.com, or call us at the office at 312-563-9000. We're in Chicago.
Work everywhere. You're an internationally known designer, so it doesn't matter if you guys are in Dubai, Chicago, or Chicago's your home.
Yeah.
As far as me, it's pretty simple. I'm here every Thursday at 5:30. You've watched Market Overdrive. We will be back next week on Thursday at 5:30. You can download this show on our podcast, as well as obviously watch us here every Thursday at 5:30 on Facebook Live. It'll be on WGN Radio's website, as well as our own website at marketoverdrive.com. And of course, you can always go back to our video catalog at YouTube, and you will see all of our shows with this one, as well as any other ones from the past. So I want to thank everybody for watching. We will see you all next week. Thank you to our hosts. See you guys later.